This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There's a good chance that the Green Mountain Care Board will vote by the end of the month on a plan that would dramatically change how healthcare providers are reimbursed in Vermont. It's known as all-payer. The idea is to pay providers based on the quality of their services and positive healthcare outcomes instead of the current system known as fee-for-service that reimburses them for every visit, every procedure, and every test that's done. Governor Peter Shumlin says it's critical for Vermont to make this change as soon as possible.
Research suggests that one reason that we spend more money than anyone else in the world on healthcare and have less good outcomes is because fee-for-service drives an inefficient delivery system that doesn't put quality first.
Well, how will this change affect healthcare providers across the state, and will it be a positive change for consumers? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Al Gobay, who is the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. And just a little later in the program, we're also going to hear from a group of healthcare providers and get their thoughts about this new reimbursement model as well. So just to start off with, what's wrong with fee-for-service? Why do you feel that it is inherently inefficient?
Yeah, so let's be sort of clear about what we mean here. So fee-for-service is a method of paying for health services. It basically means what it says, that a provider gets a fee for every service that they deliver. And, you know, fee-for-service has good things about it. You know, by paying for every service, you get a lot of services. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing in all parts of healthcare. But what fee-for-service doesn't do is it doesn't allow for the coordination of care across the care continuum. It basically kind of forces a provider's thinking into thinking about the moment and not thinking about, you know, sort of the patient's life in terms of the span of their life, or thinking about the care continuum and how that entire patient will interface with the care continuum for needed services that they need for health.
Would it be too simplistic to say that the fee-for-service model tends to reimburse for illness when someone is sick, and it has more difficulty reimbursing providers to help keep people healthy?
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of the advertisement, but I don't think that really gets at what we're talking about. You know, so the idea of keeping people healthy is what every doctor and nurse and medical technologist and every other, you know, member of the care continuum, mental health counselors, you know, ad infinitum. That's why they went to school. That's what they live to do. It's what's in their DNA. So I think that more importantly, what fee-for-service doesn't do is it doesn't allow for components of the healthcare system to be coordinated. So let me be very specific. The example I gave last time I was on the air with you is this. If you are a type 1 diabetic, and you go in to see your primary care provider, and you say, you know, hey, I haven't been really doing well with my blood sugar, and I'm kind of blue, I'm kind of down. The question for that provider is, do they have the support of a provider continuum to be able to get you access to mental health counseling on that same day or soon in order to be able to treat both conditions? That you maybe have a mental health issue and you have a type 1 diabetes issue. Because we know if you have both of those, that comorbidity, to use a 50-cent word, we know that the health outcomes from that can be really, really bad for you as a patient. And so the question is, can the care continuum support you as a patient and be able to address your needs? In fee-for-service medicine, there isn't necessarily the mechanism for that, and there's also financial constraints to it.
So let's sort of get a sense of how this might work with primary care doctors. Are we going to have a system where primary care doctors are going to receive a set amount of money for each patient that they have, and the idea is they can use that money to keep that patient as healthy as possible?
So that could be. And just to let the folks know that we held 37 meetings with providers every Monday morning for hours to try to figure out, you know, how would we pay differently, specifically for primary care? But, you know, how would we make this work across the care continuum? And one of the options that they came up with was moving to what you think of as a panel payment for primary care, or a, you know, a capitated payment for primary care. You know, those details are left to be worked out by the private sector. The agreement that we've been talking about as we've traveled the state is really just the first step in a multi-step process to allow for providers to be paid differently. How they are exactly paid between an accountable care organization and, for, say, an independent primary care doc remain to be seen, meaning that has to be worked out in the contracting between those private entities. Now, the board can weigh in on that. Act 113 put us in a primary role to oversee that. But the private sector needs to decide what's right for them. And I think most primary care providers have said they'd like options. You know, they don't want one size fits all for how they get paid in the model.
So we've gotten a number of emails on this subject, and here's the concern that these folks have, that if a primary care doctor is getting a set amount of money per patient, would that doctor be reluctant to take on a new patient who's quite sick? Let's say it's someone who's quite obese, smokes two packs of cigarettes a day, is clearly someone who is going to need a lot of healthcare services. What's going to prevent that doctor from saying, hey, my practice is full?
Yeah, so you know, now we're getting into sort of the insurance mechanisms that are inside of this. But I think the real question that you're asking is, you know, folks are nervous about change in health policy. They're nervous about even talking about it. You know, that's why, you know, whenever we bring up anything to do with this, it's met with, you know, a lot of concern. Because of things, and you and I have talked about them in the past, like Vermont Health Connect and other things that have happened at the national level, it's just a tough time to talk about health policy. But let me specifically answer your question. The way that this model works, the gentleman that you described would be an attributed patient that if the provider decided to take on would actually bring along the spend that they had, meaning if you're somebody that uses a lot of healthcare services, you bring that spend with you, and it's risk adjusted, and so that, you know, that would not be a liability for that primary care provider. There's a mathematical model to make that work. And so the idea that you want healthy patients and no sick patients actually wouldn't be a very good business model if you were working in this environment.
So are you saying that the payments to the primary care doctors per patient would be based in part on the age of the patient and other healthcare factors as well?
So they could be, but typically with primary care, they're not. They're paid a certain amount of the a certain amount could be paid in what we're talking about with a panel payment, but they still may receive a fee for service component for the volume that patients bring. And so it can be a balanced approach. The point I'm making overall is if John, for example, uses $10,000 in healthcare services a year and Susan uses $4,000, there's no advantage to the doctor to have the $4,000 instead of the $10,000 because the patients actually bring that medical history and that medical spend with them. And so when the accountable care organization is held accountable for those dollars, it's historically based on the patient's spend, not just on some aggregate average across a population. And so there's no, you know, the whole idea of cherry picking doesn't work when it's done that way.
So you mentioned this is a difficult time to be talking about big changes in healthcare. How much has the experience, and for a lot of people or a number of people, the bad experience of Vermont Health Connect affected sort of just the whole philosophy and discussion out there about this change? And how do you persuade folks that this is the time for change?
Yeah, so I certainly think it's had a huge impact. I think it may have even impacted people's basic trust in government. I mean, I don't think you can underestimate the impact that it had. Let me just say that. But I also think that you can't underestimate what people say when they come to our rate review hearings. You know, we get hundreds of public comments from people saying that insurance prices are too high. We get hundreds of public comments saying that hospital budgets are too high. You know, I can't reconcile the two. I can't sit on my hands and not try to move forward on something that many, many providers think could be a good thing for better quality and bending the cost curve just because of Vermont Health Connect. And in fact, you know, I think that would be wrong for me to do so. because I'll tell you, if you have to sit through rate review hearings and hospital budget hearings and listen to folks talk about the impact of them, of the price of health care on their family, you just can't sit and say we shouldn't do anything. And so, you know, I have to balance the two, Bob.
Let's go to our callers and start with John, who is calling from Williston. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Oh, we sure can.
Great. A couple questions, I'll be quick. I'm old enough to remember the days of HMOs, and this kind of sounds something like that. How is it similar? How is it different? And if that didn't quite work, why will this? The second question is, when that was happening, I was in my 20s. I'm in my 50s and more likely to use more health care, and the whole state is aging as a general rule. Who's going to pay for that older, more prone-to-use services population? And I guess the third question is, why is there such urgency for this when urgency is what got us the Vermont Health Connect problem in the first place?
Okay, so, John.
I'll let you answer the questions.
Hey, John, how are you? So HMOs, I think we know, and you kind of mentioned it in your question, that people feel that HMOs were a failure. And so, you know, why are we doing this and how are they different is the question. So I think this is a profoundly different opportunity for providers. You know, with HMOs, primary care providers were made gatekeepers and sort of told to stop people from going and getting the care that the patients thought they needed and, quite frankly, the doctors thought they needed. And so, you know, that one fact was enough to doom the HMO movement, but there were other issues. You know, we didn't have very good data on individuals or populations back then. I mean, it's hard to imagine that the cell phone I carry around me didn't exist until 2007. But in the 90s, we really didn't have good data. And last, I could go on about a lot of the other things that are dissimilar. But there are no networks in what we're talking about. The whole idea behind an HMO was make the primary care keeper, the primary care provider, the gatekeeper, and then keep you in a narrow network where they knew what the costs were and basically save money. In this, there's total patient choice, meaning you can't tell a beneficiary where they can go or where they can't go. And I think it's important for people to understand that. The second question you had was, you know, what about us getting older? And the quick answer is that everything we talk about in this model is done per beneficiary, meaning it's not basically let's cap spending as a state or cap spending at a certain amount. It's all designed to say how many people will be on Medicare in year one, and we believe that'll be a little over 120,000, as to year five, which we think will have almost 150,000 people in the state on Medicare at the end of the agreement. But because it's done per beneficiary on the spend that they have seen historically trended forward with a rate of growth for inflation, we think it adequately funds the health system and won't just be some arbitrary number that would lead to bad outcomes. The last question you had, why hurry? Well, we don't have to hurry. We don't have to do this, and the board could vote no. But if we wait until after the election, then the secretary and the federal government and the governor have said they won't sign it, and so then we're waiting for a new administration at both levels. And then at that point, I think we're kind of done with this for quite a while. And so I think we need to make a decision on whether we think this is a good idea or not, you know, as a board, taking into account the public, the patients, and the providers, and see if this is something we think we should do. But the reason for the timeliness of this is because of the election.
We wanted to know how various healthcare providers in Vermont feel about all payer. And we're going to start with Paul Harrington, who's the executive vice president of the Vermont Medical Society, a group that represents doctors in Vermont. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. Glad to be here.
So, Paul, do you agree the current system fee for service is broken and needs to be replaced?
I think Vermont physicians, if you ask any of them, are not happy with the current system. They don't have enough time to spend with their patients. They spend too much time on administrative work. So nobody likes the current system. We've looked closely at what's been proposed, and we believe it goes in the right direction.
Do you have some concerns about it?
We do have some concerns. At our annual meeting last November, we passed criteria that would have to be met in order for the VMS to support the agreement. I outlined several of those points to a letter to Mr. Gobet last week. Over the weekend, I heard from the Shum administration that they were going to have the agreement changed to reflect the concerns that we raised in our letter. So we've been engaged in the process. We've tried to identify ways it can be improved, and it looks like our suggestions are being accepted.
So what do you like about it? What do you find attractive?
I think going away from basically paying for procedures to being paid to work with patients and keep them healthy. Certainly there's going to be a lot of health care that's going to remain the same. If you break your leg, if you have an acute injury, you're probably not going to see any change. But hopefully if you have a chronic condition, you'll be able to spend more time with your physician or nurse practitioner. And with that additional time, hopefully there'll be a stronger partnership between physicians and patients, so physicians can better understand what's the appropriate care, and patients can actually get more engaged in their own lifestyle choices to be effective partners in maintaining health.
And what about this timeline? The Green Mountain Care Board could vote by the end of the month on this. Does that strike you as a reasonable timeline?
It does. I think the Green Mountain Care Board, as well as the administration, have held a number of meetings. This document has been a couple of years in process. The agreement, while it's a six-year agreement, beginning next January, really doesn't become mature until 2018 and more particularly in 2019. So I don't think there's any reason to delay. The issue is going to be what's in the agreement, and how effectively is it implemented, and how engaged those providing care, those receiving care, are in its actual implementation. So if we're going to do this, we should do it soon so we can take the necessary steps for a good implementation.
Paul Harrington is the Executive Vice President of the Vermont Medical Society. Paul, many thanks for being on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I just wanted to pick up on one thought that you had. You said one of the reasons for doing it now, we're going to have a new governor. We're going to have a new administration at the federal level. Who knows how they're going to be looking at things like this? Well, presumably, if this is a good idea, won't they think it's a good idea, too?
They could. But I think, you know, when you're taken over as the president of the United States, I bet you have a lot on your mind. And obviously, I say that little tongue-in-cheek here. And I would say the same thing for the Vermont state governor. So, you know, while this is a big priority of the Green Mountain Care Board, it may not be a big priority of people just coming into office. You know, I would hope that whoever's elected governor and whoever's elected president would see this for the positive change that it is and support it. Because I think Paul Harrington brought up a very, very important point, which is, you know, this is one step, as I've said. The implementation of this is going to take a lot of time, in fact, years. And so there's a lot of hard work that's going to have to be done by the new administration. I don't know if waiting helps them get that done.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, my guest is Al Gobet, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. We're looking at a new reimbursement system for healthcare providers in Vermont known as All Payer. We got a number of emails who want to know, what about personal responsibility? Some folks are very good at taking care of their own health care. Some folks are not. Is this plan dependent on patient responsibility?
So the plan is not dependent upon patient responsibility, but whether or not we get complete control of our health care spending and whether or not we as people enjoy good health is. You know, we currently have responsibility issues in our fee-for-service world, meaning, you know, patients not necessarily choosing the right things. There's nothing magical about signing the agreement that will suddenly make people, you know, choose all the right things. But I think that when we begin to change our focus, and that is what this does, away from, you know, the acute treatment of illness to thinking about health, I think we can think as a society about being more responsible to each other, being more accountable to one another for, you know, the choices that we make. I mean, it's...
Let's get a comment from Janet in Cornwall, who asks a very good question. Who measures the outcomes for each doctor, and what are the criteria? So we've been talking about reimbursing and rewarding positive healthcare outcomes, yeah, keeping people healthy. Who decides all that?
Yeah, so this is, you know, one of the things that's probably least understood by the general public is, how do you measure healthcare? How do you measure quality in healthcare? It's a really difficult topic. There's a lot of opinions that surround it. But basically, we do not measure at the doctor level. You know, it's basically either at the ACO level or at the state level that we're talking about measuring. We also do measure at the health service area level. But for the purposes of this conversation about all-payer model, let's stick with ACO and state. And so basically, the ACO would be measured. The care management organization, which the ACO needs to grow into, would be measured on its ability to improve the health of a population. It is not about measuring an individual primary care doctor's performance on an individual task or an individual surgeon's performance on an individual task, like, you know, an orthopedic surgeon doing a shoulder surgery. That is not what we're trying to do with the population health measures or the outcome measures. It's scientifically and from a measure study perspective, it's really hard to do at that doctor level granularity.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Carol in Middlebury. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a question around medical records. I cannot see the system working unless the medical records from all the participating physicians are coordinated. And right now, I mean, we were promised that would happen across the state of Vermont a long time ago. And right now, if you've got a physician in Burlington or go to a practice in Middlebury, go to an eye doctor somewhere else, those records are not passed. They don't have access. A GP doesn't necessarily have access to a specialist record someplace else. And if you're talking about coordination of services, and that doesn't happen, it's not going to work. And I can tell you that I have spent hours just looking up what each of these, through different portals, what lists of medications I'm supposed to be on. And they're all different. And I keep trying to get them the same, and they're not. So how is this going to work with the medical record system we have?
Yeah, so you bring up a very good point, and I would say that you're very accurate in describing the problem. I think that we, as a state and as a nation, in order to maintain sort of a free market in electronic medical records, allowed for the creation of a whole bunch of different ones and the proliferation of those. And so depending on what system you're on, your system may not speak to another system, and you may not, as a doc, be able to look up what you need. And so the idea that the state had was to create Vital, which is a technology company that's a public-private entity created in statute to allow what's called vital access, access by doctors to these records. And, you know, that has improved drastically over the last year, still needs to, come a long way to be able to meet the standard that you're putting forth. And, yes, you're 100% correct. If you can't connect what we think of as clinical data to all of the caregivers in the care continuum, on an as-needed basis, it's really hard to deliver coordinated care.
Let's talk now with Julia Shaw, who is a healthcare policy analyst in the Office of the Healthcare Advocate, a group that represents the interests of all healthcare consumers in the state. Julia, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, Julia, what are your general thoughts about moving to this all-payer model? Is it a good idea?
Well, we agree that it's really important to start addressing cost growth in our healthcare system. Healthcare is currently unaffordable to many Vermonters, and it's likely to become more and more unaffordable if we do keep our current system. So we think that's a good goal, to reduce costs. We also agree with the model's other goals, to improve quality and increase access to care. And I think both Al and Paul have touched on the importance of the implementation of the model in ensuring that these goals are met and that the model is implemented in a way that makes sure that patients' interests are in mind.
So how do you do that? How do you guarantee and protect the rights of patients and consumers?
I think the board's going to have a really important regulatory role under this model. So as the ACO or ACOs are implementing, their different care protocols, they're contracting with providers and developing their models for payment of providers, and very importantly, the quality measures at the ACO level, I think the board's going to need to really ramp up its regulatory role and make sure that the board and the public are getting the information that they need and acting on that information in a timely manner.
And what would be some of your biggest concerns in general?
I think as the model gets implemented, we're really looking for transparency. So we're looking for the opportunity for stakeholders and for the public to know what's going on, even though the ACO is a private entity or multiple ACOs are private entities. They're going to be taking on, a huge portion of the healthcare system in Vermont. So given that expanded role, I think it's going to be really important for there to be, transparent processes for developing some of these things. And we're really hoping that the board's going to ensure that stakeholders, patients, consumers all have a voice as this moves forward.
Julia Shaw is a healthcare policy analyst in the Office of the Healthcare Advocate. Julia, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you again for having me.
You were talking about the timeline for this, sooner as opposed to later. You've held a number of public hearings across the state. You've obviously, with the board, have studied this very, very closely. At this point, are you inclined to support this idea?
You mean me personally?
Yes.
I am.
So when the board vote comes, you're likely to be a yes?
I am, but I'm still listening. So, people ask me all the time, what are you listening for? I've been sort of a healthy skeptic on this for the last 2 years, because when you're negotiating something, you have to be hard on it. You have to constantly be critical of yourself and your thoughts. And so I've tried to do that, but I've also learned in my life that, you could only do so well by yourself. So I've been looking for, different parts of the community to really tear this apart and say what they think of it. And we're starting to hear back now. I had said at the press conference that we were at together, Bob, that, providers will weigh in on this. And so we've been trying to listen to see what they think. The key thing that I've heard loud and clear from providers is implementation is really going to matter. How the ACO contracts with hospitals and independent providers and FQHCs, how that's done across an ACO or ACOs is pivotal to, how big is the coalition of the willing. And, so those are the things I'm listening to as I try to figure out if this is still a good idea. And at this point, we've gotten a lot of feedback. We've tried to address it all. But there isn't anything that's made me think that this isn't a good idea at this point.
Back to our callers and talk to Jerry in South Burlington. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I have two questions. One, the Green Mountain Care Board has allowed physicians to make the decision to participate or not to participate. Why won't you let patients decide to opt out if they feel that this is not the best program for them? And the second question is, provider practices will receive funding from three organizations, private insurances, Medicare, and Medicaid. Will the Green Mountain Care Board actually track to see if Medicare dollars are used for Medicare patients, Medicaid dollars are used for Medicaid patients, and private insurance dollars are used for private insurance patients?
Yeah, so I'm just thinking about that second question, because the answer is pretty involved. So the opt-out question, let's hit that head on. So patients can opt out. They can opt out with their data, meaning they don't have to be a part of an accountable care organization for the data that would go with them. However, the payer that is paying the bills and working with the ACO can still hold the accountable care organization accountable for the spending. And so it's sort of a half answer. It may not make sense, but you can opt out for data. And the caller's right. This is a voluntary program for providers, and so they have the ability to say they want to do it or not. The second question is really, really a tough thing to explain to folks over the radio and quickly, but I'll try. I cannot say that any one payer's money will not be commingled with another payer's money, because in large institutions, and I mean large institutions like the Community Health Center of Burlington even, I don't even mean just, you know, Porter Hospital, Copley, or UVM Medical Center, money goes into the hospital, and it isn't earmarked for certain things or into a community health center. It basically goes in, and then certain things, you know, certain parts of the hospital you might make money on. For example, in a small hospital, you might make money on orthopedic surgery, but you might lose on your emergency room. And so you win on one area, you pay for the other area. And that goes on in healthcare all the time, and there's no way to track dollars separately. I joked at a public forum that we don't have a Medicare plow that only plows the parking spaces for Medicare beneficiaries and a commercial plow for the commercial beneficiaries. It's just not done that way. I know that, you know, folks think if they're on Medicare, that's what the money should go to, is just Medicare beneficiaries. It's not what happens.
So what happens when you have something like Medicaid, which really under-reimburses many healthcare providers, and then that money has to be made up by the private health insurance premiums?
That's the exact same story. So you could have service lines that make money or lose money and cost shift to each other. You could have income streams, which are from the payers, where, you know, if commercial pays more and Medicaid doesn't pay cost, you know, that's where you see, you know, some independent docs are saying, hey, I don't know how many Medicaid patients I can take, which causes access issues. And so you are literally using commercial dollars to fund Medicaid beneficiaries' health care. But let me be clear, that is our current system.
Can this all-payer model be successful if you don't address the very low reimbursement rate for Medicaid patients?
It can be successful, but it won't be as successful as it could be. I mean, I think that if you could actually get all payers paying relatively with, you know, the same, I don't mean the exact same, and trending forward, you know, meaning growing at the same percentage from one year to another, you'd begin to see the cost shift go away. And so, you know, that would be a really good thing for patients. Just forget about paying for healthcare as a patient, but just as a patient accessing the healthcare system. It would be great if providers could be agnostic as to what type of payer you have as a patient.
And the problem or the solution there would lie with the legislature in terms of appropriating more money for higher Medicaid reimbursement rates?
Yes, but let's not just leave it with the legislature, meaning the governor would have to want to do it. The legislature would want to have to do it. But I see those two as the minority issue here. I mean, let's not put the weight of the earth on all of them. It's whether or not we as Vermonters want to do that. And so, you know, that conversation would have to be had, and people would have to feel good about that. But that would have to be within the context of how we prioritize everything. But I don't want to just, you know, we tend to hang everything on the legislature. I mean, they're a reflection of our priorities.
Well, the governor tried to address this issue a couple of years ago, and
folks
said, no, we don't like this idea.
Yeah, but let's, you know, I hear that, and I know he says that, but, that you know, there was a lot going on at that time that may have also impacted that. So I don't think that we should give up on taking a look at the disparity between provider rates of the different payers. I don't think that question has been asked and answered for eternity.
Well, joining us right now to discuss the all-payer plan is Dr. Paul Rice, the Chief Medical Officer at Family Medicine in Williston. He's also on the board of Health First, a group of independent doctors in Vermont. Paul, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So, Paul, what are your thoughts about all payer?
Well, that's a pretty broad question. We'll start from what Julia said. Vermonters feel that the cost of health care is too high, so we have to do something. And we can't just do it in small incremental steps, or we won't accomplish what really needs to be done. We need to do something major. This opportunity does have that potential to do something major. But like others, we have concerns. Most of this, as Paul Harrington mentioned, most of this proposal won't have palpable effects next year. Next year will be the time where we really work on the details such that we would have a program for 2018 that really has meat and substance to it and has the potential to really change the way we provide care.
Paul, Al Govey just said, you know, this is an optional system for doctors. If doctors don't want to participate in it, they don't have to. But he's also mentioned that some changes are coming down the line in fee-for-service for a number of programs. But if it is optional, doesn't that give doctors an opportunity to opt out?
Yes, it does. The options really are the options of doing nothing are not very good, though, especially for our independent practitioners that are one by one essentially going out of business. Over the last 5 years, we've lost many of them. Our membership has shrunk from 160 to less than 130 just in the last year. And that's because the current system of reimbursement and pay-for-service is not sustainable, especially in places with high Medicaid populations. And the reason for that has been discussed already a little bit. We went into this with a couple of recommendations and understanding with being part of this negotiation. One of those requests and recommendations and that we've talked about is that it must focus on primary care. We must put more resources into primary care. There's a growing body of evidence and some substantial current evidence that systems that do well around the world, as well as the ACOs across the country that have been successful, are successful because they are not only primary care based, but based on management by practicing physicians running the programs. They've done the best in terms of ACO. So we know that we have to put more emphasis on primary care. We know that other states are. They have substantial programs, and we have to compete with other states to expand our primary care base. One of the major metrics in this program is access to primary care and the primary care workforce. And if we're going to meet those metrics, we're going to have to come up with something substantial, for the primary care doctors to want to be involved in this.
Dr. Paul Rice is on the board of Health First, an organization representing independent doctors in Vermont. Paul, many thanks for being on the program today.
You're welcome.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at a plan that would change how healthcare providers are reimbursed in Vermont, a plan known as All Payer. And with us is Al Govey, who is chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. Bill in Cornwall, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Repeatedly in this discussion, I've heard that details of this are not quite worked out. This will be decided after implementation. The whole thing's sounds surprisingly vague at this point. It makes me think a little bit of the ill-conceived campaign for the single-payer plan of a few years ago that Governor Shumlin was pushing so hard, where the commitment was made and vast amounts of time, energy, and money were poured into it, only to finally conclude that it couldn't be paid for and it couldn't possibly work. Might this be a similar sort of situation? Thank you.
So, Bill, first of all, I don't know the statistical chances of getting two callers from Cornwall, but that's kind of interesting in and of itself. So, so what I would say to your question is that I certainly hear your frustration with the way that the single-payer issue was handled and the way it was addressed, and I also, you know, have talked earlier about Vermont Health Connect. And so, you know, what was unique to those two things, and why is this different? Well, single-payer and Vermont Health Connect were actions taken by the state government and federal government that were sort of mandatory, meaning if you're going to pass a tax, it's for everyone. And if you force people into the exchange, you're doing it for everyone that's affected by the exchange, which I am as a small business owner, just to let you know. And so that's one way of doing things. And I agree, and that, you know, we know how those have gone. This is a totally different way of doing something, meaning we're trying to say, let's let the private sector decide if they want to be a part of a new way to pay for health care. To be clear, the federal government through Medicare has said loud and clear, and in fact on Friday released its final rule for how it's going to pay differently with Medicare. And so what this opportunity does for us is it says, hey, we can create a local option for Medicare and make it so that doctors are paid differently across payers so that they don't have to, you know, basically have a foot in two different canoes, being paid fee-for-service for a huge majority and being paid under a different payment methodology for another part of the population. And so, Bill, to be clear here, you know, this is not the type of thing where we're forcing anyone into it. And, you know, the private sector should rightfully decide a lot of this, and that's why the details, you know, are not prescribed. If there were details in an agreement between the state and federal government that prescribed exactly how all this should happen, I would agree with you, Bill, and I would vote no on it.
I think that's probably what a lot of people are thinking here, that the Green Mountain Care Board is going to vote on this probably by the end of the month. And where are the details? And what you've been saying to us today is this is really step one?
That's right. It's step one of what I would say are four steps. The first step is to get permission from the federal government to be able to allow Medicare to pay differently with an agreement for how we're going to do it across payers with the federal government. And then the second step would be providers creating an accountable care organization or organizations and contracting with payers, commercial, Medicaid, and Medicare. The third step, the ACO has to actually contract with providers. And that's where we have to focus on primary care the way that Paul Rice said, and I agree with him 100%. Fourth, if you're a large provider, like a hospital, you've got to figure out how you're going to pay your docs. And that's a big step when you're changing the way that you pay for healthcare.
It's a fascinating issue, and we hope to have you back on again
anytime you want.
Help us understand better how it's all going to work, its effect on providers, and its effect on patients as well. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bob.